This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Packer and Durham, it's the Power Hour.
Sit tight, we're going to the Power Hour.
Hour number three, the Power Hour.
Time to get the Yoo-Hoo and the beef jerky ready.
There we go. Look at that.
Look at this.
This is coming in the mail, so the next time we meet up.
What is the motto that you live by?
Bottoms up.
Put that singlet on with a little bourbon, you'll be all set.
Why do you wear lousy announcer hats? We got you covered between now and 10 a.m.
This is like a TV show. I mean, this isn't often.
No, it is a TV show.
Right now, we go right to the Laurel Market, where he is fresh off putting in something else on his tab. Jay Billis joins us bright and early here in Charlotte, N.C. Mr. Billis, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We are excellent. Well, Wes is really, really good. I'm just okay. Wes is doing good. I'm struggling a little bit, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. We're good to go.
Jay, here's the deal. I got a noon tea time, and Packer's got a bad knee and has to go to the dentist today. So who's winning? That would be the question.
Whew.
That is a full service dentist. If he can take care of your, he or she can take care of your knee as well as your teeth.
See, I think that might be the problem. that I'm going for a knee specialist, and they asked me to open wide. I'm not exactly sure what that means, other than my wallet. But we're trying to figure this whole thing out one way or the other. All right, let's get into hoops. Virginia Tech, no basketball this week. We have discussed, you know, woulda, coulda, and shoulda. We're now into March. Mm. We got the protocol stuff going on. We got contact tracing. Jay, what do you think? I mean, this is going to be the interesting path we're going to follow here in March as teams try to stay healthy to play in tournaments, whether it be a conference tournament or the big tournament itself.
Yeah, it sort of raises a lot of questions about how does a team deal with an issue like this with the NCAA tournament looming, and does that compromise the ACC tournament for Virginia Tech? And I don't know the answer to that. Can they play? Will they play? And then they're going to have to go seven straight days before the NCAA tournament. We're starting to get up near the deadline here. So there are a lot of moving parts to this. But one thing, I think once you get into the NCAA bubble, they're not going to let any teams get bounced out of there. So if there's a player that tests positive or if they have an inconclusive result, things like that, they'll just bounce the player and keep the team. They've made that very clear. They haven't said it outright, but in all their other statements, they've made that clear. So we're not going to – I would be very, very surprised if we see a team that once the tournament starts gets bounced – or once you get into the bubble, you get bounced out. The key is getting in. And it seems like some teams are kind of limping toward the finish line in that regard. You're just hopeful that everybody's healthy, because you guys have talked about this. All these pauses are different. Some of them are contact tracing where you can practice with certain players and you don't seem to lose that much. And then others were like Baylor just had, where it was reported they had 8 players down with the virus. And you could tell when they played against Kansas that wasn't the Baylor team we've seen before. Same thing with Louisville when they came back, you know, things like that.
So I want to make sure I get this right. You think once we get to Indianapolis and they get started, we'll finish with the original format, so this replacement concept that's out there probably doesn't come into play at all?
I don't think so. I think the replacement concept will happen before they, you know, kind of before they get there and before their 7 days with negative tests and all that stuff. But once we start playing, it will take an extraordinary issue for a team to get bounced out of the field. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm hopeful it won't happen anyway. But it sounds like they, with all these monitoring devices, they're gonna be you know, sort of conservative about bouncing teams out, and it's not going to be like it was early on in the season where, you know, you had contact tracing and guys were out for periods of time when, you know, you guys have heard all the stories. You had players that were out for contact tracing and they were negative. They kept testing negative, but because of the contact tracing protocols, they'd be sitting in their room for 3 weeks you know, being around one guy than another and all that stuff. They've kind of worked some of that stuff out now.
Jay, with the exception, take the health issue out, which I know is impossible to do, but let's just take health out. What do you think the biggest storyline will be for the men's tournament next week in Greensboro?
Who can play and who can't? This is going to be, I don't think the committee is going to get criticized very much this year simply because there are so many moving parts, and I'm not sure who could do a better job than any group you pick. But there's going to be a lot of teams that, because they didn't have a normal non-conference schedule, we're not going to know how good some of these mid-major teams are like we have in the past, because they don't have that data that lets us know, hey, man, these guys can really play. You know, and there are a number of them that I've seen that your eyes tell you, man, they're good. They can beat a lot of these teams. But they don't have the paper resume that they've had in the past to seed them properly. So we're gonna see some of that. And then outside of that, it's going to be, are Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan really head and shoulders above the crowd? And I think they are, in a regular season scenario, but I don't believe that a team like Florida State, or, you know, you name some of the other, some of the other teams that are at the top of the heap, you know, Villanova would have been one. I hope Colin Gillespie's okay. But it sounds like that was a serious knee injury last night against Creighton. Those three teams can be beaten. You know, it's not like they're UCLA 1969. Like, they can be beaten, and we're going to see. They're not. I would be very surprised if all three of them made it to the Final Four, and you know, Baylor and Gonzaga played for the title. I think we'd all like to see that in a way, but I'd be very surprised if that happened.
I want to get closer to home and to Saturday night. Duke and Carolina play for a second time. The stakes are incredibly different than they typically have been. We just had a hypothetical with Joe Lenardi about a potential 8-9 game next week in Greensboro involving Duke and Syracuse. The stakes of Duke Carolina, though, with both coming off a loss, seem really, really interesting on Saturday night, Jay.
Yeah, Duke has to have it. I think Duke has to win this game to feel any sort of comfort that unless they make it to the semifinals or the final of the ACC tournament, that they're going to have a Sunday worth remembering about getting in. And, you know, the last couple of games, Duke has gone to overtime, but has looked very similar to how they looked, you know, the couple games after they beat Georgia Tech and Clemson about a month ago. You know, we all thought they were turning the corner then. And they go down to Miami, get beat. They lost three in a row. And, you know, guard issues where their guards didn't play particularly well because they're young and inconsistent. And then those issues came up again after winning like four or five in a row. I can't remember whether it's four or five in a row. But, you know, the idea that a team like Duke that's young in so many spots is just going to turn the corner and everything's going to be like it used to be is not going to happen this year. But playing against North Carolina, they're going to have some issues with that front court. Matthew Hurt doesn't match up with any one of those three big guys that Roy Williams could put on the floor. That's going to be the biggest issue, is who does Matthew Hurt guard, and can he stay out of foul trouble in that game? And you guys remember the last game, you know, Caleb Love went off. I think he had 25 points, and North Carolina made a bunch of perimeter shots. If you go off of what they did against Syracuse, where they hardly made any perimeter shots, and you say, well, you know, Duke's got a great shot to win, but the combination, I think Carolina is going to play at a fever pitch against Duke, and vice versa. They're both going to play their most intense game. It's just the way this thing seems to work. But I tend to favor the ability to go get second shots for Carolina in that game, especially at home.
All right, short and sweet. Who do you consider the favorite for the ACC Player of the Year for the men?
Carlick Jones probably. I would say Carlick Jones from Louisville. Wow. He's had a great year, but that's sort of the way the year has gone, is that we're not necessarily looking at the best player from the best team. You know, do you put Raekwon Gray or MJ Walker up there. You know, Florida State's players seem not to get the postseason attention that their team success suggests they should. You know, Matthew Hurt has had an amazing year on the offensive end. He's been fantastic, especially of late, and so efficient. But we're talking about players that aren't from the best teams. And that's sort of a shocker. And, you know, look, it hasn't been the best year for the ACC. I don't think anybody would dispute that. The ACC has had much stronger years at the top. And the funny part is, I mean, usually if you say first team all ACC, you also say first round draft pick. And we're not going to be saying that this year. It's been an unusual year in that regard.
Jay, I want to go back to what you mentioned about Florida State. I'm going to add Virginia to that conversation too, because I had a coach tell me the other day, an assistant, that Jay Huff changes the dynamic of the floor at both ends from where he is on every play that Virginia's involved in. Sam Hauser's a scorer, really good player, but Jay Huff might be the most important piece to Virginia. You just mentioned Raekwon Gray and MJ Walker. Florida State's got two guys, but you can't seem to separate. Virginia seems to have two guys you can't seem to separate. Those are the two best teams in the league, as the way we stand right now. Is that part of the issue we're looking at? Is they're really good teams without a dominant star or dominant stars that we say, well, automatically they got to be on all ACC?
Yeah, I think they will be on all ACC. You know, just a question of which team. You know, and the original question was player of the year. I mean, you know, Jay Huff will probably be the ACC's most improved player, although he's going to have some competition there. There are a number of players that have improved greatly from last year to this. And Huff has had a fantastic season. You know, he can play on the perimeter and knock down threes, and he's a good cutter. He does play in the post some, and he blocks shots. And he does do some really good things out there, and has had a fantastic year. But, you know, I keep harking back when they played Florida State. I mean, he was taken totally out of the game by the way Florida State played them. Yeah. And you know, everybody has a bad game. But you know, Virginia's players over the years, I think, have gotten their due in ACC Player of the Year voting, whether it's Malcolm Brogdon or Defensive Player of the Year stuff or all ACC. I think that's happened, you know, with Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, you name it. For some reason, I don't think it has happened with Florida State, whether it was Devin Vassell or you name it. I mean, they've been praised. I don't want to say, you know, they've played in complete anonymity, but I don't think it's matched the level of their success. Mm-hmm. Now, part of that is we've had so many great players in the league, and when you're comparing a 22-point a game, you know, Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett, maybe you do get overshadowed when Leonard Hamilton doesn't play his guys the most minutes. And so their per minute averages are going to be just as good, but they're not playing as many minutes just because of the style they play. But that's, we're supposed to cut through all that stuff. And I'm not sure we've done that. I think that's on us, frankly, Wes, and I'm not sure we've done the best job of that.
I'd say, went to the crystal ball, the tournament next week, Jay. I mean, obviously Florida State and Virginia are going to be your favorites. Virginia Tech with this pause, who knows? They're going to definitely be in the double bye. Who else can you see being able to put together back-to-back-to-back games, maybe even more, to sit there and say, guess what, at the end of the day, we're cutting the nets down, and it's not Florida State, and it's not Virginia?
I think there are a number of teams that can do it. That's sort of the issue, is if you get like a quarterfinal game where the big shots, you know, Florida State and Virginia, the top of the league, if they have a rough game and get beat, then it opens up, similar to a bracket in the NCAA tournament. It opens up, and then you see somebody that you didn't think had a great chance. I mean, I think Georgia Tech, that could happen for Georgia Tech. They're good enough where they can win this tournament. The truth is, Pac, everybody's good enough to win this tournament because the top of the league isn't as strong as it's been. So when you have – you know, that sort of volatility or, you know, weakness is the wrong word, but weakness relative to the super strength the league has had in the past, you could absolutely see the fifth best team win this thing, or the sixth best team win this thing, or the sixth best record. Who knows who the best team is right now because of the inconsistency we've seen. And I do think I think we're going to see that once we get to the bubble in Indianapolis, that we're going to have some volatility from this. we're also the other thing that's hard to factor in is we're getting to the end of this thing, and the players see that the door to their isolation room is going to open soon. And how are they going to, you know, how is that going to factor in? You know, are some teams going to go, you know what, that maybe don't feel like they have a chance? Are they going to go, we've had enough, you know, this is almost over, and handle it that way? Or are they going to, you know, they're going to throw caution to the wind and, you know, play without fear and just roll? I don't know the answer to that. This is an issue of first impression for all of us. And I've said, I don't know more this year than any other year I can remember.
Yeah, interesting. By the way, I want to applaud you guys, you and Fonz and Seth, for having Josh Pastner on the world famous Bald Men Not on Campus program last week, because apparently that broke all the follicle rules that were in place on that program. Pack, I don't know if you realize that after appearing on our show, Pack, and asking for 11 teams from the ACC to make the NCAA tournament every year, Pastner went on a show with those guys and was, first of all, I can't believe he was on the show, Bill. So you get full credit for that.
Well, the one thing, you know, it wasn't just his curly locks that were, you know, anathema to our show and what we stand for. It was those mutton chop sideburns that he's grown that make him look like he was on Welcome Back, Kotter. Those things are kind of a big middle finger to the Bald Men on Campus credo, which is we're the Bald Brotherhood and we are asking people to join. First, it was Shaka Smart that went with hair, and then Josh brings those sideburns in, and we were not happy about it. I got to be honest.
Yeah, those are like 1980s NASCAR version, Jay, for us North Carolina guys. It was like old Earnhardt and old school, man. That was like mutton chops. Yeah. He can pull it off.
Looked like he looked like Jack Klugman, in the 70s.
Right. Exactly right. Odd couple.
It's good to know, by the way, that Chris Mack, a return to the Bald Brotherhood, occurs this week with Chris Mack on the show, by the way. So that's good to see that you guys have returned to your roots, if I can use that. By the way, before we let you go, you appeared in two finals as a player, won a championship, obviously, in 86. Do you know, by chance, what your scoring and rebounding average was in your 9-game ACC tournament career?
It was probably the same. My averages were pretty consistent, mediocre career. The only thing I did better in the postseason than I did in the regular season was shoot. My shooting percentages were higher, but my averages were probably about 8 points, 5 rebounds, and it was something like that.
Unbelievable. 8.2, 6.2. 8.2 points, 6.2 rebounds. And in 9 ACC games, shot 69% from the floor. Now, apparently Kay is still stewing over these 6 assists and 16 turnovers that were posted in your 9-game ACC tournament career. But other than that, I think you're doing okay.
I think he should be happy I passed it 6 times, given that I hardly ever got the ball. I was like jonesing. I was always jonesing to be the inbound guy. And he's like, why do you want to be the inbound guy? And I go, I just like to touch the ball once in a while. Would that be okay with you?
That didn't last long either, did it, Jay?
Oh,
that's funny. Oh, all right, man. Laurel Market's got your name on it. We started with it. I know you got to make a spot and head on over there. It's your spot, man.
Every morning.
Thanks.
Love it.
Appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Great to be with you.
Jay. You bet. Always.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Power Hour continues. Tyler Hansbrough coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Many thanks to Jay Billis leading things off. Been already a busy, busy morning, needless to say. Thursdays also mean accounting. And if in case, for whatever reason, you happen to miss the first installment, we've got you covered. Accounting Part 2. You ready, Mr. Durham?
Yeah. Throw it back up here, boys. Let's have a look at it, shall we? This is scary now. Packer and I are almost identical, 1 to 15 this week. Hadn't happened much, I got Pitt ahead of Notre Dame, and I know that the Panthers beat the Irish and that kind of thing. I probably made a mistake there. But Florida State, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Louisville, Georgia Tech, Clemson, North Carolina, Duke is 1-8. Orange is 9. Nice two wins for Coach Boeheim's team, but right there, Bubbalicious. 10 State, 11 Notre Dame, 12 Pitt, Wake, Miami, and BC fill out the bottom of the run for me this week in accounting.
Yeah, I wish we had some discrepancies here, but we really don't. Now, granted, we've watched the whole season, and we should probably, I would assume, be in the neighborhood. And, man, we were exactly in the same neighborhood. Here's my Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. Florida State stays at 1. Virginia's 2. Hokies are at 3. Louisville moves up this week for me to 4 after their big win against Duke. Taking care of business. Georgia Tech with their big win against Duke moves up. Clemson drops with the loss yesterday to Syracuse, North Carolina. It's the 7 spot right there. Syracuse moves up. They had a tremendous Monday-Wednesday combination, beating those teams that are right in front of them. Number 9 is NC State. Wolfpack playing good basketball, 1-5 straight. Duke dropped to 10. Overtime loss Saturday. Overtime loss against Georgia Tech. You're going down. Number 11 is Pitt. Number 12 is Notre Dame. Again, they're probably interchangeable at this state. 13, 14, 15, Swiss, Miami, BC. And number 16 for me this week would be dental visits. Because when I put this bad boy together, the dentist was on the agenda for 11 a.m. this morning. Given the fact that my knee's now actually in worse shape, it may not be a dental visit. It may be a knee specialist. But nevertheless, some medical attention is at 16 is where it is. That's the answer. There it is.
Are we done with accounting, or do we have one for Tuesday before the tournament starts?
I think we should do one more. But I'm not sure how much could it move, right? I mean, the more you give this some thought, I mean – you know, unless like the Swiss upset Georgia Tech, you know, Duke, North Carolina, they're kind of back to back.
Look at the card.
I'm not worried about the card. I mean, but what games could affect the accounting? Well, I mean, if you really think about it.
Card, yeah. I don't know. I don't. I mean, Duke, Carolina, maybe.
Yeah, but if Duke beats North Carolina,
NC State's done.
They flip flop. State's done. Virginia Tech's done. I mean, you know who the three in the. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do a post-ACC tournament. Maybe that's what we should do in case somebody makes a crazy run.
There you go. Okay.
That's probably what we'll do. How about we do that? Monday when we get back, assuming we're still employed? Monday after the ACC tournament's over, right after Selection Sunday, we do our final accounting. Just in case something crazy happens in the tournament.
I think that's the 14th of March.
14th is Sunday,
14th
right?
of March, is that right?
Sunday the 14th.
15th
Selection
of March.
Sunday.
15th
the 15th
of March.
Is a Monday.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Got a big birthday that day, by the way, on the 15th of March. And yours is the 10th, of course.
According to the internet,
then
my birthday is March 10th.
There's another birthday on March 15th.
Yeah, which is not accurate.
Yeah, that's not true. But the 15th, we do have a birthday, a real live birthday on the 15th, I think. So, there we go.
Okay.
Anyway. All right. Tyler Hansbrough to come up in just a moment on this fine program. I'm excited about that. We'll get Tyler with us. Always fun to have him back.
Here he's got a podcast.
We get a look at – he does have a podcast, Sleep Hawk Worldwide. I'm going to get him to explain it to you, too, what the podcast is about. Does have a little bit to do with basketball, but has a lot to do with something else. And I think you'll be surprised.
Okay. Look forward to that.
Right.
And it's also an anniversary.
Nice tease, right? Thank
also
you very
an anniversary
much.
For Tyler Hansbrough. Today.
Yes. Yes.
Huge
yes,
anniversary.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, in some ways, you're right.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
That's hard to believe. 14 years to the day. 14 years ago today. That seems like it was yesterday. Right?
I got Hey Woody. We got a little Hey Woody in there.
It was a little Hey
How
Woody
about that?
Right there. Yeah. It was nice.
Got a little Haywood in there. How about that? All right. 14 years ago. And look who's on the show today. Right here, making his second appearance on Packer and Durham. We went and found him. Yeah. Tyler Hansbrough joins us. It's unbelievable. Glad we called back. You on an anniversary. How about us, huh?
Yeah, it does feel like yesterday, but, man, it's crazy how fast time goes.
By the way, when you got punched in the face, even though my dear old dad said, no, that wasn't a punch. Yeah, it was. He got punched right in the face, Billy. What are you talking about? When that happened, Tyler, when you got it, was that like one of those senses of shock? Like, I can't believe that just happened? Or was that one of those, hey, I knew it just happened, and I want to go wear somebody out? Well, I mean, do you remember the moment when that went down?
Yeah, I remember, well, obviously shooting a free throw. And when I got my rebound off my own free throw, I'm not sure if I did a pump fake or what, but I remember going up and then just getting drilled. And I didn't see the defender or who it was. So when I went down, the hit initially didn't hurt as bad as it looked. But when I was on the ground, I checked my nose and I could tell I was bleeding real bad. And so I was pretty upset. So I got up and I think I was going to go after the wrong player. I'm not sure if DeMarcus Nelson was in there. Yeah. So I thought he did it for some reason. And so I was ready to go after him, but, looking back, I'm glad I didn't do that for multiple reasons. But, yeah, looking back, Gerald got me pretty good on that one.
Yeah. Have you had a conversation with him about that moment? Have you ever had that? You talk about, hey, dude, what was the story there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the time. Gerald admitted that, you know, emotions got the best of him. And, you know, we've all been there. But, yeah, for years throughout the NBA, every time we played against each other, I said I was going to get him back. And I never got him back, and I do regret that. But I know Gerald. We're over it. He's we're both highly competitive, but I still want to get him back one day. So
that's classic. Unbelievable.
Maybe we just get him back on the golf course or something like that. Is that the way it works out? Maybe just a tee ball on a $5 Nassau or something like that? Is that how it comes?
I don't know. Gerald's going to have to give me a lot of strokes. I heard he's pretty good. So, I'm willing to go there, okay, too.
Hey, Tyler, eye for an eye, man. All right. Don't be playing all that nonsense with, a buy for a barbecue. No, no. It's an eye for an eye with an invite like that, man. In no way you're doing that deal. All right.
I agree.
Yeah, that's how you deal that deal.
All right. Okay, typically you're playing pro ball in China. What's happening here? How come you're in the States? What's going on?
Yeah, so I'm still going to be playing. COVID and some other issues. You know, it's hard to get places. So right now I'm in Chapel Hill just training and kind of waiting to see where I'm going to be playing. But I'm still optimistic, and you know, I have a lot left in the tank. And I'm around Chapel Hill enjoying it, and I watch UNC play every once in a while. I'm also doing a podcast like we talked about before with a buddy of mine from college. And it's called Sleep Hawk Worldwide. We cover UNC. We cover everything, current topics. We also cover the Bachelor series. So we discuss that. We go into insights to each relationship and the dynamics of each relationship. So it's pretty good stuff.
Are you kidding me, Hansbrough? Seriously. I mean, we start this interview with, hey, I'm looking for my nose on the ground. I'm playing Duke. I'm going to go ahead and wear somebody out. I picked the wrong guy. And we go from that to the breakdown of The Bachelor. What happened in a matter of 5 minutes in this interview? Where did we go?
Well, I think we all have a Tinder spot. And it's one of those, you know, we all have like the show that we all kind of watch. My mom got me on it. She was watching it. So I was like, oh, I'll give it a shot. So it's something that me and my mom started watching, believe it or not, and we started discussing it. And so originally the podcast was supposed to cover sports. And then so it was a slow day. So I decided to talk about The Bachelor. And then for some weird reason, we got more feedback and more like, hey, we want more coverage of The Bachelor. So now we're full in on The Bachelor. And this season, The Bachelor is actually local. He's from Raleigh. Right. So we've been covering it a little bit, and it's been kind of fun.
Have you found yourself being tougher on the fact that the Bachelor's a Wake Forest guy? That you got a little Tobacco Road love there, or you give him a little slack on that?
We usually give Wake Forest people a little slack because, you know, there have been some tough times. You're not too competitive all the time. But he did make a joke about UNC to one of the girls, but she went to Carolina because there's a Carolina girl on there. And then so after that, you know, all, you know, we took everything off the table. We let him have it. So we've been going at him ever since.
Off the top ring rope.
You try to tell people, like, Packer, you try to tell people Wake's the Swiss. Everybody pulls for him, but when the Swiss uprises, there's going to be a problem.
Well, nobody hates Wake Forest. I mean, seriously, everybody, you know, when the Deacs have a down year, you're like, oh, they'll come back. Nobody hates Wake Forest. They're the only school in the ACC that doesn't have an enemy. They really don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were pretty good when I was in school. Jeff Teague, James Johnson, they gave us an L. And But I remember my freshman year, Eric Williams from them. He was a strong. He was a load down in the paint. So I agree with you, Pat.
Yeah. By the way, Tyler, how weird is it to watch Duke and Carolina this year? I know you got all kinds of stuff going on, but it has been a weird. I mean, listen, the whole year has been weird anyhow with COVID, and everybody's gone through it. But to see both of these teams at times struggle to the point that you go, man, it doesn't even look like Duke. Man, it doesn't even look like North Carolina. Now we get this showdown again coming up on Saturday, and really Duke playing for their postseason lives. North Carolina's got a little bit better situation given the win a week ago against Florida State. But how weird is that as a former great seeing both shades of blue kind of going through really uncharacteristic seasons?
Yeah, it is unique. But the one thing, I think Carolina has progressively gotten a little bit better.
Yeah,
and you know Duke has done the same. They lost one of their best players, and somehow they've continued to grow as a team and get better. But yeah, it is unique. I think our team, UNC. I think UNC. You see players come in like, you know, Walker Kessler against Florida State kind of had a coming out game, and I think you know Carolina. They're young, and I knew it was going to be an up and down year. But I didn't know it was going to be this up and down. You know, you have some big wins. I think Florida State's arguably one of the best teams in the country. And, you know, the good thing about that win is we got down early, and then you saw them come back and win, which we haven't seen much from Carolina, much comeback wins or big-time wins against teams like that. But Duke has gotten better. And the unique thing about this rivalry is it doesn't matter what rankings are or how good the teams are. They're coming to compete during this game. And so I'm really excited. I'm always excited for this game. I don't care what the rankings say. I don't care how bad the teams are. You know they want to – each team wants to win.
All right. I want to go back to something you said about Walker Kessler. We'd seen Sharp. We'd seen Brooks. We'd seen Baycott. Really is kind of the three-man rotation. But you mentioned Kessler, and counter to that, here's Mark Williams, who I think's really emerged nicely for Coach K the last couple of weeks playing inside for Duke. Mm-hmm. The path that these young guys have, they're going to play bigger roles on Saturday night, certainly than they did in the first meeting. Just from your perspective, what have you seen in Kessler and what have you seen in Williams in terms of their development as freshmen? I think Sharp came in with an expectation, Baycott, Brooks, older kids. Duke doesn't really have an answer in the middle early. In that first meeting, and I think that's part of Saturday night is Williams and Kessler and their roles in this game.
Yeah, I think Walker Kessler has a ton of potential. I think he could be one of the best bigs Coach Williams ever coached. He's got length, he's got, you know, he moves well for his size too, and he's got good touch. And I think for freshmen especially, is sometimes it takes a little bit to get that feel, that game feel, and also get your confidence up. I mean, it's hard coming in there playing spot minutes. And then you throw COVID and being in quarantine and then try to get that game rhythm is difficult. So I was really happy for Kessler to come out against Florida State and play like he did, because I think that's something that he's capable of doing, you know, on a nightly basis once he gets that feel and that confidence. But Williams for Duke, I haven't seen much of him play, but I watched a little bit of the Georgia Tech. Yeah, he's going to provide some rim protection, and he's a roll threat down the middle, which they didn't have last time. And, you know, he's going to grab rebounds and get easy buckets, which is a huge deal.
Tyler, if you were playing All right, for argument's sake. And Matthew Hurt is your headache for the night. How would you defend him?
I would contest his shot. I wouldn't give him anything easy. I don't think I move pretty good laterally, so I would have no problem getting up in him and guarding him, aggressive.
Mm. Yeah.
But to be
Is
honest
that the
with
key?
You, I like
you think you
got to
body him so, up?
I think you got to run him, to be honest with you. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Wow. Not many people. I mean, he gets a lot of clean stuff, doesn't he? In terms of what they do offensively, he ends up with a lot of wide open shots. He doesn't get run much. They don't challenge. He ends up being the guy that finds the crease, it seems like, for them.
Yeah, when they played the first game, I don't think he had a bad game. But the more I watch him, I think he's comfortable. He gets good looks. He's always moving without the ball. He's a threat in the post and from the 3-point line. But usually when you have those good offensive players like that, you got to make them play defense. And so that can wear them down, by running them, putting them in pick and rolls. And, our bigs are physical, so it's tough to get down low and then bang and then, guard in the post, then run in transition and then go back and move on offense. That's difficult to do.
By the way, in your heyday, I'm going to put all your worlds together in this one question. In your heyday, who would have made the best bachelor on UNC's team?
Ooh.
Oh, no. Don't say Frazier. Do not say Frazier. Don't say Frazier.
No, it will not be Frazier. Frazier was not a ladies' man. He was not smooth. He had the moves of a school bus. let me see here.
Are you going to say Burke? Are you going to throw Dewey out there? You going to throw Dewey under the bus?
I'm going to go Marcus Guinyard would have been a great one. And I'm going to go maybe Wes Miller. I would have loved to see those two. That would have been Miller. They would have made a great one. So, yes, Wes Miller.
You know what? I could see that question morphing into your podcast. That could be an all-timer for an all-ACC bachelor question right there.
I agree. I'm going to put a list together, and I'll put it up next podcast for you guys.
All right. That's fair enough. By the way, who would be the worst?
Hey.
Who would be the worst bachelor of that group?
Probably Frazier, to be honest with you. Yeah, Frazier. No question.
That's great.
Hey, by the way, I know you did a game on ACC Plus, the Northeastern game. It was your first game as an analyst. So did you give yourself a grade? Did you go back and watch the tape? What'd you think?
I didn't go back and watch the tape. it's funny because my girlfriend texted me and said, "Hey, you're putting people asleep. Talk a little bit more. Show a little more energy." And so the second half, I got more comfortable as the game went on. And I thought that was pretty funny. But, no, I had a good time doing it. A lot of respect for you guys to do the games. It's much more difficult than people think, especially when somebody's talking in your ear and you're trying to explain a play or tell a story. But I had a good time doing it, so I enjoyed it.
All right, let me ask you this. So the game ends. So what was the critique from the better half at that point in time? Did you improve like North Carolina basketball this year, or was she even more difficult afterwards?
No, it was like North Carolina basketball. I got a little bit better and better. And so as the game went on, I got more comfortable and comfortable. So by the end of the game, I thought I did a good job. So I kind of patted myself on the back. And she said, "You got much better." I also had a cup of coffee at halftime. So that really helped me as well. So.
Well, happy anniversary.
Seth Greenberg. Yeah. Happy anniversary to you and Gerald Henderson. Seth Greenberg comes on this show every Monday, by the way. Anything that you'd like us to share? Would you like to send Coach Greenberg a message about the jump shot in Charlotte at the 08 tournament? Anything we need to pass along to Coach Greenberg for our Monday visit next week?
Absolutely not. That was I'm sure he sees that way too much. I would hate to rub it in his face, but man, that was a big play. That was a big moment. Yeah.
He still has nightmares, cold chills every time he thinks about it.
He still has a nightmare.
I promise you. Well, good luck, man. I can't wait to hear the podcast. Well.
I appreciate it. Yes.
Who knew?
You guys take care.
Be good.
Yep. All right. Tyler Hansbrough, co-host of the Sleep Hawk Worldwide podcast, available for download. They'll talk basketball and the Bachelor Pack. That's why I didn't tell you what this podcast was about.
You know, my daughters love The Bachelor. And I've told both of them, because Gigi in Atlanta has said, Dad, I'm going to audition for it. And I told her, I said, sweetheart, listen, I thought we did a better job raising you, but if that's what you want to do, here's the deal. Mm-hmm. If you do it and you audition and you get on the show and you reach the point of the come home dates or whatever they call that, home makeover, I don't know what they call it. I don't watch it. Hometown dates, there's Meg screaming in my ear, hometown dates. Yeah. I said, I promise you. I said, I swear to God, I promise you, the second the door opens with that TV camera there, I will have a bag over my head. And I will conduct all the interviews with a bag on my head. So if you want to go audition, you knock yourself out.
The unknown comic. There you go.
No, I won't even put the eyes out. I'm just going to put a bag over my head.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Chester Fuller. Cast thousands, man, tons of guests there. Lots of fun, as always. Big day in Greensboro. Obviously, we'll talk about the ACC Women's Tournament in a second, but kind of a sad day, Wes. We lost one of the good guys. We really did.
Yeah, Larry Wall was the executive director of media relations for our buddy Eric Palms at the Orange Bowl in South Florida. Larry was a guy who had a remarkable sports career, and he passed away yesterday, 67 years old, had multiple myeloma, former leukemia. But Larry's career spanned, not only did he have a great impact in South Florida, used to work at the University of Miami. He was a confidant of George Steinbrenner as a vice president of media relations and for the New York Yankees back in the 70s. In fact, he and Steinbrenner flew to Ohio when Thurman Munson died to be with his widow. I mean, you remember back in those days. He later worked for ABC Sports, where he was I guess you cut your PR teeth when you have to control Howard Cosell. Just an amazing, amazing sports journey in his professional career. But Larry has two kids and some grandchildren, and our best to his family and friends. He was a wonderful guy. Had a chance to be at the Orange Bowl a couple different times, and he was always gracious and wanted to make sure he took care of the media. One of those guys that was able to work with the media and also be part of the brand, right, Pac? You know, you got to represent the institute or the team or whatever the case may be, but also befriend the media. Susan Miller Deegan, by the way, wrote a really nice piece on Larry in the Miami paper last night. And our thoughts with everybody in South Florida on Larry Wall.
Yeah, he understood both sides, and not everybody does. And I think that's what made him so good. But a real gregarious guy, and that was really sad news hearing about that last night. And again, our thoughts and prayers. Eric's a good bud and always has been. And again, anytime you needed something, those folks took good care of you, and they always do. So our thoughts and prayers go out, needless to say.
Yep, a couple of tweets. Blake James, the AD at Miami. Of course, Larry worked for the Hurricanes for a while in athletics as well. Blake James tweeted out, so sad to learn the news of the death of Larry Wall, one of the best in the business. Thoughts and prayers for his family and all those who knew him. Bill Hancock, who knew Larry obviously from the Orange Bowl and various other entities, said college football and humanity lost a great one with Larry Wall's passing today. Larry's many friends learned from his eternal optimism and warm heart. A lot of truth in that. We will never forget him. So, again, our best to the family and friends. We remember Larry Wall today. He was a big part of ACC football success with the Orange Bowl as well. Tonight at 8 o'clock, right here on ACC Network, we call your attention to a really interesting piece that documents last year's Atlantic Coast Conference basketball tournament. Scott McBurney at the front of The Tournament That Wasn't, and it premieres tonight at 8 o'clock on ACC Network. I think you'll really want to see it. Great insight from coaches and players, personalities, packs on there. It's really a fascinating look at, and John Swofford was there talking about the decision process. It's really, really good, Pack.
I wasn't aware I was on that, but I know it'll be great. And, it's funny, with the women's tournament starting yesterday, and I still remember us being there for the women's tournament, and I really remember us for the men's tournament when it all just came to a screeching halt, and all of sports came to a screeching halt. Hard to believe we're coming up on that one-year anniversary, but that is a tournament in which we will never forget. There will never be one like it ever again. At least let's hope so, right? Let's hope so.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.